So welcome into Morning Invest. I am Clayton Morris. So glad to have you here on this Monday. We've got a lot to get to. We'll get to the stimulus update in a moment. And we're going to talk about debt ceiling, child tax credits, and take some of your super chats a little bit later. So let's start with the big news, which is Nancy Pelosi. At 5:30 p.m. today, Congress will kick off an extraordinary week with only one thing that's certain. No one knows what's going to happen. That's the bottom line. No one has any idea what's going to happen. The House and the Senate are moving towards votes on legislation dealing with the government funding, the debt limit infrastructure, social programs. We've got a whole host of other big things that are on this initiative. Specifically, I mean, the infrastructure bill, right? That's the big one. That's the big one. So roads and bridges and traffic patterns and TSA and traveling and all of that. And social programs and taxes worth trillions of dollars. Though some of the details of all of this aren't yet close to finalized, this would be a huge agenda for the entire month. The House is going to try to tackle it in 1 week, while the Senate attempts to try to avoid a government shutdown. Democratic leaders in both chambers also still having to try to figure out how to avoid a catastrophic debt default in October. Now, remember the debt default stuff. We'll get to that in just a moment. We have a little bit more to touch on the debt ceiling, as you can see here in the rundown. We will be talking about the debt ceiling in a few moments. And I should presage or foreshadow, I guess foreshadow. What would be a good, foreshadowing? Like in a movie where like someone puts down a cup and they take a shot of it. They're like, why did that guy put that cup right there? And then like right a little bit later in the movie, it pops up or earlier in the movie, suddenly a random actor just coughs. That's one of my favorite foreshadowings. You know what that, you know what I'm talking about? Like randomly. An actor is just like, and then like 30 minutes later, they've got cancer, you know, it's kind of how it happens.
Foreshadowing.
The cough is my favorite though. Cause there's no reason a cough should be in a movie, right? They would edit that out, but what's happening?
Like, oh, that character's dying.
Yeah. Oh no, the cough, you know. So this is like your foreshadowing cough right now, which is the defaults, the debt limit and default that we are facing in the United States coming up in a little bit later. And I should say that, you know, a lot of the default, all of the stuff is stuff that has already been spent by Congress under the Trump administration. And now we're having to pay for it. But Republicans are saying, hey, we don't think we should vote for that. We shouldn't increase that, even though we already approved it when Trump was still president. Now we're going to let the Democrats deal with that. I love how this all works. Anyway, it's a huge moment for President Joe Biden because Speaker Pelosi, Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer, the biggest so far right now in the 117th Congress. It's fair to say that what happens in the next couple of weeks will go a long way to deciding whether or not Democrats have any shot of keeping the House or the Senate next year. I mean, this is not to put too fine a point on it, but passing all of this, getting Nancy Pelosi to pull off this agenda is going to have huge implications in the midterm elections. Failure on any of these issues will be a political disaster for Democrats and the overall party. Pelosi hasn't faced a legislative challenge quite like this since the passage of the Affordable Care Act back in 2010, nearly a dozen years ago. Schumer hasn't ever been involved in a huge high wire act of this nature as Senate Majority Leader in the Senate. So Biden, of course, has never dealt with anything remotely like this in his eight months as president, although he did as senator and then vice president for Obamacare. But Speaker Pelosi wants Democrats to pass two huge packages. So let's go through these. The roughly $1 trillion bipartisan infrastructure bill, roads and bridges, et cetera, right? But the more important one, the one that I care the most about, is the $3.5 trillion spending bill that would inject an unprecedented amount of federal dollars into the social safety net. Climate change mitigation, education, family funding, total remake of the American economy, a total remake of the American family landscape. Make no mistake about it. $3.5 trillion and all of these things, you know, I mean, it's pretty big. On top of that, Congress is going to need to fund the federal government past Thursday at midnight in order to avoid a partial government shutdown. So the stakes are huge right now as they eye the midterm elections. Coming up next year, Democrats want to be able to show voters that they can actually get things done, make a positive difference in Americans' lives. And hey, and they can say, hey, we had a mandate, even though they really didn't. They actually lost, you know, seats in the House of Representatives, right? So Nancy Pelosi actually lost a little bit of power, you know. But they can say, hey, you voted for Biden. You voted for the Senate. You voted for Democrats overall. Here's what we gave you. We gave you massive child tax credits. We gave you massive change in infrastructure in the United States, education, climate, on and on and on. So let's break this down. Here's what the three projects, and here's where they stand right now on the infrastructure bill. This package would provide $600 billion. Now, remember, a lot of this was already money just sort of sitting there, right? That was being repackaged from COVID relief money. So this package would provide about $600 billion in fresh funding to upgrade the country's aging roads, expanding roads where we sit in these like ridiculous traffic jams all day. So adding extra lanes, shoring up some of the infrastructure underneath these roads that are crumbling, transit, electric grid, broadband networks. We've heard so much about the broadband, right? And students not being able to even go to school or have adequate broadband for remote learning in a pandemic. 12 million kids. It's already passed the Senate with support from Republicans, but more progressive Democrats want to prioritize the social spending bill. Still, Pelosi is bullish on that. She said, let me just say that we're going to pass the bill this week, she said yesterday. Okay. Do you believe that? Like, do you buy that? Let me know in the chat what you think. Like, is she going to be able to pull this off? Again, never underestimate Nancy Pelosi. That's one thing that, you know, her enemies, I'm not a Nancy Pelosi fan at all, but one thing her enemies have tried to do in the past is to underestimate her. They've underestimated her at their peril. So this is an opportunity for her to show once again that she does have control of her caucus, that she can pull these progressives together, and she can make the big changes that are needed for her party. The social and the environment spending bill, that's the one that I'm most concerned to write, right? That's the one that I'm most interested in, which is the $3.5 trillion. This is perhaps the biggest lightning rod. Many Democrats think this package will be transformative in cutting both poverty and carbon emissions. And, I mean, just looking at like states like New York, here we hear it, see Manhattan right here on the screen, some states are already being proactive towards the carbon emissions issue, and laying groundwork to say that by a certain year, we will not allow any gas cars to be sold in a particular state, California, New York, leading these charges. And so a lot of states are going to be left behind if they are, not covering this. But Republicans and some centrist Democrats are balking at the $3.5 trillion price tag. Expect the total cost to come down as Democrats seek a big compromise on this. And then you have the government shutdown piece of this, because we can all agree it would be silly to shut down government operations during a pandemic. Lawmakers say they could pass a short-term spending patch with bipartisan support to keep the lights on, which is what they do. I mean, I love these sort of just stopgap spending measures. Like, we're just going to do a temporary thing here. And by the way, why are we still having these ridiculous, like, government shutdown meetings? It's like brinksmanship. You know, every few months we have to go through this crap. And each side kind of, you know, pounds their chest a little bit and tries to pretend like they're the better party because they care more about fiscal responsibility. It's all garbage. We know that neither of these parties give a crap about the debt, give a crap about, you know, cutting government spending. Everyone pays lip service to it. George W. Bush talked about it. He expanded the massive size of government. Obama expanded the size of government. Trump expanded the size of government. I think that, you know, Biden's not going to do that as well. Bottom line, these next few days in D.C. could be a make or break moment for Biden's domestic agenda. So a lot riding on these next few days. I'm right now, starting today, like I said, this afternoon, we're going to see the back and forth on this $3.5 trillion stimulus package, what is in, what is out, where we may even start to see the glimmering of a framework. So anyone out there telling you that they know what's in this thing, they do not. We have a basic framework that came from the House Democrats before, and that's what the Senate was working off of. But a lot of this has been redlined, ripped up, written on, scratched up. And so we really won't have a full understanding of what's on this one $3.5 trillion stimulus package until maybe later this week. We might not even see it until it's already voted on. You know, Nancy Pelosi likes to vote on things that she hasn't read. So we may even see that at the end of the week.
Half of Congress won't see what's in it until after they vote on it. So,
I mean, shouldn't we make a rule about this? I mean, I know we talk about this here on the show, like this idea that, like, how can you have members of Congress voting on these things if they haven't read them?
Well, you know, it all comes down to, in my opinion, like, you know, the old bread and circus quote, you know, like that's what the people need. It's just bread and circus. Like, they're giving us plenty of circus and we get lots of that. Now, I think it's about time they start giving some bread too, but
yeah, I mean, hey, you know, Congress can very quickly, of course, give themselves a pay raise. You know, they can do that. They don't even have to read those bills. They can get to crank those things out real fast.
Yeah, I'm always very mistrustful when Congress starts talking about frameworks. Like, oh, we got the framework down, which is, to me, is always like, so basically you've done nothing. that's code for like, well, we had a conversation.
Right.
There's literally nothing that we don't even know what's in this thing that we're talking about, but we've got a framework.
A framework. So we have a general idea of how much. So we know the framework is that it's going to be $3.5 trillion, but we'll see. I mean, we're going to get to a story here in just a moment about Kyrsten Sinema and Joe Manchin, because we're saying $3.5 trillion, but there's a lot of money floating around out there right now that's trying to kill this thing and doesn't want this price tag anywhere near that high. So even like the idea of a framework of $3.5 trillion might, we keep saying that, all the headlines keep saying that, but that might not actually be reality. So we'll have an update on that price tag in just a moment. But first, I want to thank our friends over at Uprising Food. You know, I love this company. One thing that you need to know about the United States right now is that the United States, and I don't know if you know this, Philip, the United States is in trouble. And I don't know if you know this, but the food system in the United States is fundamentally broken. And it's making us sick at scale. The people at Uprising Food are fixing that. Uprising's mission is to liberate all of us from a fundamentally broken food system that's stealing our health. I had a long talk with the CEO of the company a few weeks ago, and we had a great conversation. I mean, we could have been like brothers from another mother, because like we are on the same page when it is to fixing the food system in the United States and bringing fresh ingredients that aren't filled with preservatives to the table in America. The real devil is in the snowball effect of all the silent inflammation that happens to people. And Uprising Food have cracked the code on healthy bread. You simply can't find something this healthy that tastes this good and is this fresh. Only 2 net carbs per serving, 6 grams of protein, 9 grams of fiber. They cover paleo to clean keto to simple low carb to high fiber to dairy-free and grain-free lifestyles. All Uprising products are baked with real superfood ingredients, almonds, MCT oil, apple cider vinegar, egg white, and olive oil, and others. Uprising has made prebiotic fiber delicious with their patent-pending breakthrough in husk activation, making fantastic digestive health absurdly easy for all of us. Really, really delicious. And you've got to try these. And their rye chips are delicious.
I was just going to say, is that a dark rye?
Yes, they are delicious.
Now I'm sold.
And I've been talking to them. They have some really exciting products that are coming down the pipeline. And I told them, like, once you guys get these, I can't mention it. They're not allowed to mention it yet. But let me just say this. I got a pizza oven, and I'm waiting for you guys. Uprising Foods is offering, they're offering our listeners $10 off the starter bundle. That includes two superfood cubes and 4-pack of Freedom chips to try. Go to uprisingfood.com/invest and the discount will be automatically applied at checkout. So you have to go to that URL, uprisingfood.com/invest, to get $10 off your first purchase of their starter bundle. So our thanks to Uprising Food. And I love their logo also, by the way. It's like Revolutionary War style. That's what they're going for. So nice. Our thanks to them. So let's talk about the debt ceiling, because this is the next battle in the front here. So over the weekend, Janet Yellen, Treasury Secretary, spent the weekend calling Mitch McConnell, who's the turtle boy from Kentucky, who really pretends to care about the American people. Like, he's really concerned right now about spending when it has nothing to do with making money for Wall Street or getting money to big businesses or other corporate interests, et cetera. Like, he seems really concerned with spending. And now he's really concerned with the debt ceiling. So Janet Yellen called Mitch McConnell this weekend to have a meeting, basically to say, hey, don't play chicken with this debt ceiling. You realize, sir, that the money that we are now voting on to increase the debt limit ceiling is because you, when you were majority leader in the Senate and were underneath Donald Trump, these were things that you had approved. So the debt ceiling is paying for the things in the past. This is not new stuff. Apparently, the phone call didn't go so well. Mitch McConnell held to his guns, basically said, yay, Republicans, you know, Democrats don't even need us right now. Like, you guys can pass this on your own. So basically, they're going to say, we're not voting for this. We're not going to be a part of this conversation. Democrats can, you know, raise the debt ceiling if they want to. If they're going to tie it together with this reconciliation bill, then they can just do it on their own. They don't need us. So Janet Yellen is saying, look, we are facing a disaster of economic proportions. If the American, full faith and credit of the American economy, the government cannot pay back these debts that we've taken out, that we've lent money to or borrowed money from, like, we can't pay this back. The whole United States as a reserve currency of the world has a lot of problems on its hand if that's the case. But that's okay. They'll continue to play chicken with this. I mean, I think we're on the verge of the United States dollar not being the reserve currency of the world much longer anyway. You know my feelings about that. But anyway, Mitch McConnell balked at this, said, no, we're not going to help. So that's where Republicans stand. I also love when politicians lie right on television. And Republicans played this game this weekend, and they play it every time Democrats are in charge. They're using the debt ceiling as a cudgel to try to paint Democrats as irresponsible tax and spenders, even if they're the ones that actually help run up the deficit in the first place. They blame it on Democrats, even though it was already in place when they were in power. And they're hoping that you're just too stupid. They're hoping that the American people are too stupid and uninformed. And they don't read books. They don't understand how this entire system works. And they're at it again, holding the full faith and credit of the United States government hostage, filibustering, lifting the debt ceiling. So Senator Pat Toomey of Pennsylvania, who's retiring, I guess he feels unfettered. So he's taking like the Mitch McConnell line and lying to the American people about that this money wasn't already paid, wasn't already accounted for, wasn't already spent under Trump and Republicans. He's lying right to the American people. So watch Senator Pat Toomey not even get really pressed by Jake Tapper at all during this discussion.
So that's the reality. That's the way it's going to happen.
So you know as well as I do, probably better than I do, that the debt limit, raising the debt ceiling, does not apply to the future expenses you're talking about. It's about paying for spending.
Jake, can I cut you? Jake, no, I'm going to cut you off right. That is totally factually false.
I'm going to spread some lies right now. It is not totally factually false. It is 100% true.
False?
It's factually false.
So Jake, just give him your air. Give him your air time. You know that it's not true. Why are you letting him sabotage an interview?
Yeah, absolutely. There's all kinds of spending that is yet to be approved, including the huge $5 trillion bill that you were discussing with several guests earlier on this show.
Yes, of
course. The annual appropriation bill.
But raising the debt ceiling.
None of that's happened yet.
But it's
the appropriation. Nothing to do with what the debt ceiling limit increase is about. Again, a total canard. These politicians, I mean, just liars, liars, liars.
It's about the spending that Congress has already approved. That's why we're hitting the ceiling, because that spending is happening.
No, Jake, I've just told you how you're incorrect. So you want to continue to push me on this this false narrative here? Look, Jake.
And he did use the word factually, which means he cannot be lying.
He cannot be lying.
If I say factually before I say something, it must be true.
I mean, this iced coffee in my child's like penguin mug is factually delicious.
Jake, I've just walked you through spending that has not yet occurred, but our Democrat colleagues want to engage in. They are going to dramatically increase the amount of money that will need to be borrowed because they want to engage in all this spending, all right, and they want the authority to borrow it now.
So, but Senator, even if...
I don't agree with that spending.
Okay. Even if the $3.5 trillion spending package that's being discussed, the budget reconciliation and the infrastructure, the bipartisan infrastructure bill, even if those were tabled in perpetuity, would Congress have to raise the debt ceiling or not?
So you mean if, like, what your little hypothetical piece of this is taken out of it, like, would you agree that we have to raise this debt ceiling?
Some point we would.
Okay.
At some point we would, yes, but hoping that it only falls under a Democratic window so we can blame them again.
That's my
smaller amount. But that matters. The timing of this is coming much more quickly, and the scale is much greater than it would otherwise be.
Right. Next month it would happen instead of next week. But that's my point, is that this is already about spending that already occurred, including $8 trillion of debt under the Trump administration.
No, the way I think about it is it is.
No. So you might be throwing some facts at me here, Jake. But, the way I think about it, though, is totally different. Like, when you show me facts, I just think differently. You know, I just go in a different direction. That's how I
feel. It's like, the way I think about it is, I don't like what you just said to me.
Right. Here's what I just don't like the way I think about it is, when people tell me that we spend a lot of money, I say, no, it's the Democrats. I just say that over and over again, and hopefully people believe me.
It is certainly not. The spending that's already occurred, the money was raised for it, either through...
Oh, so the $8 trillion, the money was raised under the Trump tax cuts? $8 trillion? You mean that was all paid for?
Taxes or through debt. This is about future spending, some of which we've already committed to.
Wait a minute. It was paid for through taxes and debt? Have you tried to ever pay a bill using debt? Like, how does that work?
I'm gonna do that on my next power bill. Like, hey, I owe you like $150, but I also owe $150 on my credit card. So,
right,
there you go.
I'm just gonna pay for it with debt and see if that, rob Peter to pay Paul and see if that works. Like,
in the form of the big entitlement programs that are on autopilot, much of which has not been committed to, such as the new entitlement programs that our Democratic colleagues want to launch. But it's indisputable that this spending spree, if you spend more, you will have to borrow more. And the Democrats want to spend vastly more, so they are driving up the need for still more debt in the future to cover all of the spending they want to engage
in. Sure, I get that. But for instance, the $3.5 trillion Budget Reconciliation Act, Build Back Better, the Democrats, and I know you oppose this, but the Democrats are proposing tax increases to pay for it. When it came to, for example, the Trump tax cuts, that was about $6 trillion. Most of it was paid for one way or another, but not $2 trillion of it. That was not paid for in any way. You supported that, and that created debt as well.
Well, yeah, Jake, it also created the strongest economy of my life.
So he did admit $2 trillion of it, we didn't have a way to pay for it. He said, yeah, Jake, but I got to say, it did create the strongest economy in my lifetime.
Lifetime. That's just an indisputable fact. Strong economic growth in 2019, record low unemployment rates in 2019, all-time record low for many subsets of Americans, including African Americans, Hispanic Americans, and wage growth that was accelerating fastest for low-income workers, without... just happening organically because of the strong economic growth. That kind of economic growth generates more tax revenue. We were seeing the complete success of the tax reform. It's indisputable that we had the best economy of my lifetime. And now the Democrats want to undo the very tax regime that helped enable that tremendous economic growth. A very bad idea.
Let me just ask you, technically, a government shutdown could have a severe impact on the efforts to combat the pandemic. Parts of the CDC, parts of the NIH could be.
So he literally, Jake didn't even follow that up. It was met by crickets from Jake Tapper, who just moved on to asking about funding the CDC and the NIH with the pandemic going on, and whether the Republicans would vote for a clean bill or not. Look, as ProPublica discussed in January, the Trump tax cuts built a national debt so big, even before the pandemic, that it'll weigh down the economy for years to come. From ProPublica, let me pull this up here, the king of debt, Trump, promised to reduce the national debt. Then his tax cuts made it surge. And in the pandemic, he oversaw the third biggest deficit increase of any president. It would have been nice to see Jake Tapper bother to point that out to Senator Toomey. Like, those are facts. And so this economy that was so great, you know, did it really benefit lower income Americans? I mean, like, this economy, Wall Street was exploding, of course. Corporate taxes, you know, corporate revenues off the charts.
Well, isn't Wall Street the economy? Wait a minute, what?
Right.
If Wall Street's doing well, we all are, I thought.
Yeah. Aren't corporations people too? You know, just because Amazon doesn't pay anything in taxes, like, Amazon is a person. She cares about
as a person,
people.
I'm happy to pull their burden for them. I'm glad to pay my taxes so that Amazon doesn't have to.
I mean, it's amazing, these guys. I mean, look, we have a runaway spending problem in the United States, without a doubt. But it's all, I believe that we have enough revenue in the United States if it's just marshaled properly. If you look at the money coming in and the money going out is going to, we're talking about funding the Iron Dome project in Israel right now. Send them $1 billion so they can build a missile defense system. Let's send billions of dollars around the world. Let's continue to do that. Let's spend $750 billion a year on a defense budget. So Senator Pat Toomey can act all sanctimonious and pretend like, you know, there's no way in the world that we can possibly pay for Social Security for the next 30 years to make sure that that's solvent. How in the world are we going to pay for all these child tax credits for people? I got news for you that when the lowest among us are actually doing well, they're contributing to the economy, they're buying groceries, they're not food insecure, they're not worried about paying their rent, they're actually contributing to society. By having this net there, it lifts everything up, as we've seen in other countries that have done this effectively. Norway, Finland, almost all of Europe, Iceland. By the way, I don't know if you saw the Iceland news. Did you see the Iceland news overnight or over the weekend? Iceland elected its first, like, all-female parliament.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. First European parliament to have... By the way, I didn't even know... And this is how ignorant I am. I didn't even know Iceland was technically in Europe. Like, I know it's a part of the EU, right? But I didn't realize it was actually in Europe. I mean, I guess it's, you know, where do you draw the line, like, it being Europe? But
right.
Technically, you know? I'd like to go to Iceland. They've got hot sauna or hot baths, and I like a hot bath, like a hot sulfur bath. So, you know, the debt ceiling debate, not over yet. Republicans want to be all sanctimonious with this and pretend like they have nothing to do with it, when in fact we're increasing the debt ceiling to pay for the crap that was already accounted for and offered and owed, borrowed from banks in the United States and China, all over the world. I mean, and it's not just China, by the way. It's a small percentage of this debt. Mostly it's U.S. banks. Mostly it's, like, you know, our friends at close to home. So now you're basically going to say, Republicans, that we don't really want to pay for that stuff. Like, we'll borrow that money and use it, and we'll fund missile, we'll fund bombing campaigns around the world. But when it comes to paying you back, we're not really into that. So that's the very latest on the debt ceiling increase. So just one of two big dramatic moments that we're going to see this week in Washington. We'll keep a close eye on it here. Please make sure if you haven't already, you've got to be a subscriber to our daily newsletter. I don't mention this enough, and I get yelled at by my team because it's such a great newsletter, and we put so much work into it. We write it. It takes like 3-4 hours to write every morning, so it's delivered to your email inbox first thing in the morning. Just go to morninginvest.com, and you'll get about 4 or 5 stories plus a few little different nuggets and things you might have missed while you were sleeping. Perfect way to kick off your morning over a cup of coffee, and it's totally free. Just go to morninginvest.com and put in your email address. You'll get a welcome email. It might go to your spam folder, so just be careful. If it goes to your spam folder, just drag it into your inbox. It'll come from me. The email comes from me. Clayton@morninginvest.com is my email. And just let me know that you got it when you get the welcome email, and you'll get it first thing tomorrow if you haven't already. We got more news to get to here on the show. Let's talk about this child tax credit. So over the weekend, an interesting story emerged from the Democratic side. And I'll ask you this question. You know, what does it mean to have a family? What does it mean to be a family? And maybe in your eyes, it's probably different, I would think, than what in the eyes of the government, right? I'm sure across this country, there are people who, you know, might not be blood relatives that are taking care of someone else in the family or taking care of someone who they would consider family. Maybe it's someone who's just lived with the family because they lost a mom and dad years ago. And so they've just taken care of them for many, many years. How many people watching right now can think of a situation in your own sort of circle where it might not be on paper described as technically a family, according to the U.S. government, but in your eyes, you're like, you know, Molly is family. You know, she's our daughter, even though she's not blood, right? I'm sure you guys can think of examples. Drop me a comment below about that if that applies to you. So what does it mean to be a family? Well, Democrats are asking the very same question this morning. Democrats specifically are looking to expand the meaning of family. Imperial Majesty says, yeah, I raised my godson. And to you, that would be family, right? Although not blood. I have a couple of friends that have godchildren. They spend like all their time with the godchildren. They're not related. But they spend so much time, they would likely call, you might consider them by saying brother or uncle, right? So all of these things are, you know, subjective, I guess. But does it matter? It does to the government. So now Democrats are looking to change this eligibility for the child tax credit. Nancy Pelosi wants to alter this. That means that you would not have to be a relative of a child to receive this $3,600 a year in child tax benefits. The credit would instead apply to anyone who cares for a child, related or not. Think how transformative this will be. People who are left out simply because they don't fit a certain definition. You remember after 9/11, right? Certainly dependent on the state you were in. I don't know if you saw the movie. It was a powerful movie called Worth, W-O-R-T-H, Worth, with Michael Keaton. Came out this year. It's on Netflix. You can watch it. It's a great movie. And he was playing the role, having to figure out the worth of a family, the worth of someone who died in 9/11. And if there was a gay couple, depending on the state was up to dispersing those funds for those who had been lost, a family member who had been lost in 9/11. Well, just so happened that, you know, there was a couple that one of them, they lived in Virginia. Well, the state laws just didn't recognize it. Therefore, they didn't get access to that funds. Like, really? But in New York State, they got access to the funds. So all of these definitions really matter when it comes time to this for these things. Researchers say that hundreds of thousands of children in the United States are cared for by people who are not related to them. Hundreds of thousands. So under the current child tax credit payment program, those people would not receive $3,600 per child. Those payments to help them support those children, even just because they're not blood. Democrats proposed a change to this rule under their new tax plan. And we'll see if it passes. Not everyone agrees that this should be done, of course. The IRS worries that it cannot verify these payments. I love that they're really I love that the IRS, don't you? They're really concerned about verifying crap when it comes to like a small amount of money that would go out to help people. Right? They don't even give a rat's behind that all of these billionaire tax cheats aren't paying taxes. But they're worried about how are they going to verify these payments? And they're worried about what would this mean for like child tax benefits such as the earned income tax credit. So how are they going to verify this specifically? I don't know. Figure it out.
Yeah, it's the ship is sinking. There are people in the water, and you've got people on the on the sinking ship going, well, we shouldn't throw out life vests because we don't know if everybody's actually drowning. There might be somebody out there that's a strong swimmer. We don't want to waste these life preservers on that.
Yeah, is that guy out there by that iceberg, is he swimming? I can't see.
They're like, No, we can't risk it. We can't risk a few people taking advantage of this system to save hundreds of thousands.
This life preserver is so valuable that I just don't want to waste it on that guy. I mean, he's right by that iceberg. He could just grab onto it.
It's infuriating.
You know, and bottom line, they're not even talking about fraud in the system. You're always going to have fraud in the system, right? I mean, when I worked in retail, you accounted for, what was it like, they called it shrinkage, I think, or like 1 or 2% of, when I worked in the video store, like 1 or 2% of your overall number could be accounted for by shrinkage, theft, people stealing CDs or whatever. You know what I mean? In the number. It's going to be in there. There's going to be fraud. There's going to be some moron who's taking advantage of the system. But most people won't. So just figure out a way to account for these people and help these people. So under these newly proposed rules, an adult would qualify for the tax credit if they maintain a secure environment where the child lives. So I guess unlike the movie The Room, although that might be a really secure environment. I wonder if that guy would qualify. Wouldn't that be amazing? Like the guy that in the movie The Room, he's like, hey, I've got some captives that I keep in this room. It's under lock and key. They haven't seen daylight in 10 years. Is that good? Is that a stable and secure environment where the child lives? And they also have to be involved in financial and other support, as well as taking their responsibility for education or medical care. So do they make sure they take the child to get a haircut? Do they take them to the doctor? Do they take them to school? You know, all of those things would factor into this and make these people apply, you know, and have a system that follows up on that. It's not that difficult. Other countries do this. Shouldn't be that difficult. And who cares if the IRS can't handle it? You know what? They just hired 4,000 additional people to be on the phones. You know, rejigger some of those resources. They already make billions of dollars. They can do this. So again, I think this is a huge story, a remaking of the child tax credit, an expansion to hundreds of thousands of additional Americans. I think the child tax credit is already a transformative bill, and I'm hoping that Democrats will see to it this week as part of this stimulus and reconciliation package to expand this $3,600 permanently, not just this temporary for a few years, but to make it permanent. And yes, to expand it to include people who are also taking care of children who might not be blood relatives. I'd love to hear your thoughts on this. Drop me a comment below. We got more news to get to here. I want to talk about corruption and these Democrats to watch. But first, I want to tell you about our friends at Everlane. So Everlane makes really fantastic, comfortable clothing using ethical factories and transparent pricing since 2010. They do extensive research and vetting on ethical factories that provide fair wages, reasonable hours to the skilled people who craft their clothing. Timeless design, the finest sustainable materials. You know, the thing is, you know, one of your, like, just taking an adventure, like, we're doing a little fall trip coming up, and to have some great clothes that you can, you know, you don't have to stock your suitcase with so many different outfits, just layering some different things so that you're ready for the fall, ready for a little cold temperatures, you're wearing sustainable fabrics. These guys do a wonderful job, and it's perfect time now to upgrade your fall wardrobe with a great company that's doing everything from skinny to relaxed, slim to athletic. Find the perfect cut that fits you just right. And if you go to their website, you can check out all of the different styles from the pants to the long sleeve shirts. I just ordered one of their long sleeve shirts. Really, really comfortable. Breathable organic cotton trackwear gives an elevated take on tried and true basics. You try all of this. And guess what? You're going to get 10% off your first order plus free shipping. If you go to everlane.com/invest, and sign up for 10% off your first order plus free shipping. Get easy returns within 30 days of your ship date. That's 10% off your first order when you go to everlane.com/invest and sign up. Betty Boop says you should be a QVC presenter. You know, the funny thing is, Betty, I only allow, you know, on products and things that I know that my audience would use or I use personally. And so I love their fabrics and I love companies that are taking this next step to make sure that they're ethically treated, factory and workers, and sustainable as well. So really great stuff, making sure that, like, not wasting plastic and all of that. So thank you so much, Betty. By the way, yeah, QVC, remember that? Like, I remember that's, you remember, like, that was when I actually bought my, I convinced my dad, because I wanted to work in broadcasting. I love the medium of broadcasting and communicating. And so when I was a kid, I was like, I want to get a camcorder, you know, like, I want to be able to create videos. I want to create. I loved it. And so one afternoon on QVC, they were showing off a JVC camcorder. And I just sat there and I was like, wow, you can do all of those things with this camcorder. And then I literally was like, parroting what they were saying on QVC to my dad. I'm like, Dad, can you see what this does? I mean, it's going to allow me to do so much filming of our family, vacations, like everything, just, you know, even cataloging our family. My dad just was like, and he just kept walking by, you know, he was doing stuff in the house. I'm like, Dad, and this camcorder, you can even add digital lines, like text overlays and all of this stuff. Dad, imagine how much I'll be able to create. I could even make a career out of television.
Sounds like you should have got a commission on that.
I know. Then finally he's like, fine. Okay. I'm like, really? He's like, yeah. So we dialed. That was the only thing I've ever ordered from QVC. So we called the 800 number. He over the phone, he gave him the credit card number. And then the big box showed up with the camcorder. And man, I used the heck out of that thing. And look, then I started working in television. So Dad, thanks to that QVC camcorder that I convinced you to buy, here I am today, providing for my family. So maybe I should work at QVC. I don't know. You'd have to get really excited about stupid stuff, though, stuff that I don't care about. You know, like today we're talking about Tupperware and the freshness burp that seals in freshness.
Once they throw that shake weight at you.
When the shake weight is like that. Like that. Oh, man. The shake weight. Oh, man. All right. Talk about this. All right. It's time for a corruption watch here on the show. And I've got some Democrats that we need to keep our eyes on because right now in Washington, all eyes on what unfolds with the stimulus vote this week, both the $1 trillion stimulus package for infrastructure and then the $3.5 trillion human infrastructure piece. That includes everything from the child tax credit to education and climate change and on and on and on. Well, there's been a number of pieces we've been covering here on the show, a couple of couple of senators, well, specifically one, Joe Manchin, Senate from West Virginia, that we've been covering here on the show. But I want to touch on him, plus now Kyrsten Sinema and the money that's been flowing into Kyrsten Sinema in an effort to try to squash this $3.5 trillion infrastructure package. But first, let's look at Joe Manchin's dirty empire. So Joe Manchin, the senator from West Virginia, The Intercept did a great piece on all of the big money that flows into Joe Manchin's pockets from a network of coal companies with grim records on pollution, safety violations, and death. So he's made plenty of money off of the money that's come in from on the fossil fuel company. You know, he had a private meeting with President Biden. And he said, look, if you're sticking your head in the sand saying that fossil fuels has to be eliminated in America and they want to get rid of it, thinking that's going to clean up the global climate, it won't clean it up at all. If anything, it would be worse. So Joe Manchin's position is eliminating dirty coal would actually make climate change worse. And yet he's making millions from the coal industry. Do you see how these things likely go hand in hand? You know, he is, of course, in coal-friendly West Virginia, where he's made his money in the industry for a considerable fortune for many, many years. For decades, Manchin has profited from a series of coal companies that he founded in the 1980s. So the coal companies and these larger dark money has been pouring into the likes of Joe Manchin and others. Advertisements and others basically saying, hey, you got to vote no on this $3.5 trillion infrastructure package, or at least it'll dramatically reduce the price tag. And we don't want to pay more taxes, us businesses. So Joe, we've been lining your pockets for years. Make sure you step in and vote no on this infrastructure package. Two companies specifically, Enner Systems and Farmington Resources, Manchin's Transcon and Farmington Energy in 2005 that merged. Enner Systems purchased low-quality waste coal from mines and resells it to power plants as fuel. So it takes the crap and then resells it to power plants as fuel. While Farmington Resources provides support activities for mining and holds coal reserves in the Fairmont area. Over the decades, whether feeding tens of thousands of tons of dirty waste coal into the power plants in northern West Virginia or subjecting workers to unsafe working conditions, Manchin's family coal business has entirely avoided public scrutiny. They just look the other way, where he's made his money. So no wonder that he's happy to oppose this stuff. Surprising, shocking. Shocking. But now we know that dark money has been pouring in to the likes of Kyrsten Sinema and others. In fact, a leaked email from, as we pointed out on the show last week, No Labels, praised Senator Kyrsten Sinema for her heroic efforts on the infrastructure bill. No Labels says it's now clear that the reconciliation package will be delinked in time from the infrastructure bill and will be less than $3.5 trillion if it passes at all. Praising Kyrsten Sinema for trying to delink the thing. Maybe dropping it, you know, hey, so we don't give a rat's behind about child care or elder care or expansion of Medicare or Medicaid and a host of other policy advances. But, of course, groups that the big fund, you know, the big funding would see some tax hikes. So they'd have to pay some more money in taxes. Maybe they'll approve only $2.9 trillion. So right now, this is all coming to a head. Even President Biden thanked Kyrsten Sinema. This is amazing. So Kyrsten Sinema basically came out and said, we will fight for lower drug prices, she said. So Team Biden puts out an ad and thanks her. They're like, wow, okay. And so this is what it's amazing. It's like, she does something that she should be doing, and now, and like the Biden, dark money group created by allies of President Biden released an ad thanking her. So she wants lower drug prices. She's in Arizona, an elderly population in Arizona, right? Who could benefit from lower prescription drug prices. So she says she's going to do that. And then a dark money group sends out an ad saying, thank you. You're for pushing for lower drug prices in the new infrastructure package. Well, that was a little too fast, because while Sinema previously campaigned on this pledge to reduce drug costs, the freshman senator and one-time progressive turned corporatist has emerged as a chief roadblock to allow Medicare to use its bulk purchasing power to negotiate significantly lower drug prices. So she's walked this back. So don't thank her too soon, you know. Don't count your chickens before they hatch or some other thing. But now we're learning this morning that Kyrsten Sinema has been taking additional monies from big business, and that's why she's likely to vote to oppose this $3.5 trillion stimulus package. We're learning this morning that Kyrsten Sinema used the winery where she interned to fundraise with private equity firms. Okay, when I saw this story, I said, wait a second. A senator is an intern? She's interning while she's a senator? At a winery? Yes, and so did research. Yes, in fact, that's the case. She is, in fact, using her influence from when she was an intern this past summer, 2020, at a winery. The Arizona senator, who's blocking tax increases on the rich, spent the summer courting donors who stand to lose under the major tax reform. In the summer of 2020, she interned at the Three Sticks Winery in Sonoma, California. Owned by Bill Price, a co-founder of the private equity Leviathan TPG Capital. She was an intern? Like, what? She's a senator. She was elected in January of 2019. She became senator of Arizona. And in her summers, instead of helping her constituents in Arizona, she's interning at a private hedge fund-owned winery. Okay. And she was paid for it. So she was there being paid as an intern at this winery in wages for her work. And then she held huge fundraisers that she came to the winery. It's a little pat on the back here. So then she goes to the winery and hosts a whole bunch of fundraisers in August of this summer, netting her campaign tons of money from all of these private equity donors, all of whom who do not want her to vote for an infrastructure package that would raise taxes on the wealthy. She says, and she's told Democrats, that she would oppose any tax increases on either corporate or personal rates. She says, and her opposition to tax hikes on the rich comes amid a major spending blitz to encourage her to stand up against any tax increases on private equity executives or hedge funds. So she holds a fundraiser at the Three Sticks Winery where she was an intern, and charges $5,000 per plate, per guest, to come into the door. The Getting Things Done Political Action Committee, a leadership pact used to support fellow congressional moderates, with contributions going towards her and these different campaigns, which are being used right now to stop the infrastructure package. Again, if you're ever wondering, you know, like, what is the motivation for Kyrsten Sinema? Like, what is her motivation to not give a crap about you? It's all money. Just, you know, don't listen to what they say. Watch what they do. Watch the flow of money. Taking money from all of these rich donors and hedge fund guys. She used to be in the Green Party, for crying out loud. Actually made her political early career in trying to help people. until the big money starts flowing in. Corruption, corruption, corruption.
Again, I mean, that's the thing. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Like, that's the infuriating thing is, like, the American people need Congress to do something. Congress does not need the American people because they're already set up. I mean, it's like they don't care. She doesn't care if she gets voted out. It's because she's fine. She's going to be fine. All she has to do is take one for the team, and that team is not the American people. That team are these hedge funds, these big donors. Just take one for them. You know, if you get voted out, that's fine because the next person in line is going to be taken care of also. They do not need us. And they've stopped pretending like they need us.
Right. Their futures are set up. They're, you know, for Joe Manchin, his kids are set up. I think his kids are even on the board of one of the big coal companies. You know, his daughter as well. So they're all taken care of. You know, and right now you have these two moderate Senate Democrats. They aren't particularly swayed by Nancy Pelosi's timetable. They don't really care because they're like, well, they're all taken care of by these hedge funds and all these big money donors. But if the House passes a package that Manchin and Sinema find lacking, they're going to slow it down in the Senate, and they're going to try to get out of it what they want, which is more money or lower taxes, making sure that these big businesses are taken care of. I mean, Jonathan Stewart says, how do we stop this corruption? We've got to remove money from politics and demand that our politicians that we elect. You know, there are some positive signs. There are some positive signs that there is an uprising in the United States of in groups who are absolutely at wit's end from both parties, like I am, who are demanding a change. No money in politics. That's how we change it. I mean, money corrupts, right? Money corrupts these guys. And so you have someone like Bernie Sanders, you have someone like AOC, they have really good intentions, you think. And then they get to a point where they support a lot of really good stuff for progressives, but then they get to a point where they have to hold truth to power, right? Where they have to like stare down the beast, and they balk, they walk away from that fight, you know? And then we elect someone, a populist like Donald Trump, right? Who wins office by basically, you know, showing the elitism of a Hillary Clinton. And I'm going to protect you and your steel jobs and you know, and all of both Republicans and Democrats for years have ripped you apart. They got us into these phony wars, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That's how Donald Trump won. And all these people said, yeah, okay. Then he gets in there and what does he do? Doesn't do anything to help the little guy. In fact, does more to help the wealthy once again than perhaps any president in modern American history. And so, you know, again, you have these little opportunities you think might actually happen, and money corrupts. So I think we could, you know, that's one way we need to get this money out of politics, make the system so that you can't have, money cannot be spent in politics. You know, it's amazing. If you think about some of the other, I have a friend who does a lot of political campaigns, and he, you know, he works on different international campaigns around the world. It'll be in Slovakia, then it'll be in Italy, you know, Israel. And so, and most of those campaigns are like a month and a half, you know, from a presidential campaign. Like September until like early November or something, or the end of October. And that's it. And then he's done. He's like, oh, I'm free. I'll go get lunch again. The United States, we're already planning for the next election, 2024. You know, like it never stops in the United States. And for 2 years, we'll have a next presidential race of money just pouring in. Because they can make so much money off of it. That's what's so troubling, you know?
I recently saw this this interview with a guy that did a study, and he was basically comparing American politics. Like, it's not actually, like, the two sides are not actually a philosophical point where we're trying to debate ideals anymore. It's sports. It's a hobby. Politics has become a hobby for most of the people, where it's like, in sports, you don't feel bad. Like you're an Eagles fan, I assume. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you have no problem saying like the Eagles are the best, and you know, like screw the Vikings, you know, like, and nobody bats an eye at that. And that's what we've become in politics, because it's no longer a debate of ideas. it's just standing on your side and yelling. And that's the, from a like Congress's standpoint, that's beautiful, because then we're just out here arguing with each other and we can't unite. And since the American people can't unite against Congress, they could do whatever they want. They have no fear of us, because we're out here bickering with each other rather than looking at what they're doing and saying, hey, this is not right. And they don't have to worry about us.
Yeah. And every few years they run on cultural issues. You know, that's how they get us involved. You know, It's the Roe v. Wade cultural issues they try to run on. But when they actually get in office, they don't care about those cultural issues at all. What they end up doing is supporting big business. That's it.
Yeah,
and
they just keep us entertained. That's what they're doing.
Are we not entertaining? Have I not entertained you?
Yeah, not keep going back to that gladiator thing. But I mean, it's honestly like with that whole bread and circus thing, they called that out so long ago. Like, if you want to keep the masses happy, just give them these things, and then you're free to do whatever you want. And
yeah, give them just like little scraps, you know, enough. Like, you know, it's like what Amazon's doing right now. Don't organize. Don't become a union shop. We'll give you just a little bit of a raise, and we'll also throw in the opportunity that we might pay for bachelor's degrees. Like, just like a little bit of, you know, we'll just give you a little stuff, you know?
Yeah.
Not the real stuff, but just little stuff, you know? So, anyway, any super chats that we had today?
No, we had Lee Curtis had a $5 super chat, but didn't say anything about it. And then it was just a $5, so thank you for that. And that was all we had for super chats today.
Well, Grover, thanks you for all of that. I wanted to try to keep the show tight today. Keep things on track here. We got Frederick Lasort says, Thomas Jefferson said something like, when government becomes destructive to our liberties, it's the right of the people to alter or abolish it. You might have that quote more accurate than I could pay homage to it. But yeah, I say that all the time. Thomas Jefferson really believed that a government or people in a government, people, you and me, should never be fearful of our government, right? That a government, though, should always be fearful of its people, fearful that we'll rise up and cast off this system. And in the United States, we are all fearful of the system. I mean, just look at this. I didn't cover it today. I'll cover it tomorrow on the show. I mean, new story this morning about how the post office is, there's like a secret group inside the post office that's spying on Americans. Like, we should start asking the question, instead of like which groups inside the government are spying on us, we should ask like which groups are not. Like, maybe the DMV. I don't know who's not spying on us. But the fact that, you know, like Edward Snowden reveals that like our government is like listening to all of our phone calls and creating just this like database of information. And the post office is now spying on us. Okay. Like, that's a time when, you know, we should be fearful. We are fearful of our government. It's time to throw off the shackles of this government.
Yeah, yeah. And it's like, I wouldn't advocate for like open rebellion kind of thing. But like, that's honestly, the government doesn't fear that. You know, that's that we become so ingrained with the rule of law that we still think that we can vote them out and that will fix it. But it's like that system is, it doesn't matter, because they are not afraid of the people.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I mean, so because somebody pointed out, like, well, has there been a government that hasn't had corruption? Probably not. The difference is, you know, like, you can find corruption. Like, if you ferret out that corruption, you're like, this person was corrupt, and everybody's like, shame on you, and there's some repercussions to it. Now they can be openly corrupt. They don't even have to hide it, and there are no consequences.
When you look at, you know, Iceland, you know, after the financial collapse, Iceland's a perfect example of a country that said, whoa, 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 whoa. Like, this sort of, this corruption that allowed ordinary average Icelanders, Icelanders to be destroyed financially because of wealthy elites, like, and wealthy elites who were even in the government, no more, never again. And rewrote their constitution. Rebuilt their government, and now just today electing the first all-female or majority female parliament, you know, like, transformative. So you can ferret it out, and you can, you know, do things to change things and make big dramatic changes. I mean, look what, again, I come back to some of the, you know, the Scandinavian countries, and look what Norway has done as a beacon of hope in the rest of the world, Finland, other parts of Europe, take care of its people.
You know? And this, to kind of, so Frederick Lassort said the first thing we need to do is stop paying politicians six-figure incomes when people will run for office, because the reality, they want to help people instead of line their pockets. That's the start. I agree with that, but the problem is, if we stopped paying them those six-figure incomes, we're not their source of income. The American people, like, paying them that six figures, that is not where they're making their money.
Right.
So they wouldn't even notice. I mean, it'd be an accounting error, a rounding error to them. You know, like, that's not where their money's coming from. How can somebody like Nancy Pelosi makes like what, tens of millions a year just off of like investment stuff that she's sitting on the committee that like what is it, like the tech. Like the tech giants that she's invested in, it's like we're not their source of income.
No,
they don't care. I mean,
they can make millions of dollars through these investments and the very things that they're overseeing through different committees in the Senate. I mean, it's just, it should be absolutely illegal, but it's not. You know, they get their hands slapped because, you know, it's like policing themselves. It's like having a group of like 4-year-olds and making them police themselves, you know, like at recess. Like, oh my God, what's going to happen there? You know.
Well, the difference between the Congress and 4-year-olds is 4-year-olds would have more integrity. They'd be more apt to be like, oh, I'm sorry, I did this thing. I had impulse control problems, and they're going to cry and they're going to feel bad about it.
I ate the crackers. I ate them. Yes, I just was so hungry. Oh, thank you for telling us.
Yeah. I would love to have Congress that at least acted like 4-year-olds.
That's true. That's true. Well, thank you, everyone, for a great show. Thank you for joining us. We'll have smaller versions of some of our content today. You can always see that. Make sure you're subscribed to the channel. We do this show every day live at 9 a.m. Eastern time. But be sure you're subscribed and turn on that little bell notification, because we publish videos throughout the day as well. So you'll want to watch those. And that's one way to do it. You can also, like Philip put up here on the screen, you can become a channel member and support independent journalism. We are not bought and sold by billionaire corporations, so we are funded by you. So thank you so much. If you go to morninginvest.com/join, you can become a channel member for as cheap as $1.99 a month. It's the price of a cup of coffee once a month to support our show and keep us free from corporate overlords. So thank you so much, everyone. We'll see you tomorrow at 9 a.m. Eastern time right here on the channel. Be good to everyone. Our thoughts, hope David doesn't have strep throat. We'll see what he's got. Check in with him. I told him to get load up on probiotics. You know, everyone gets these like antibiotics and they end up like killing their entire gut bacteria out. I haven't had an antibiotic in like 10 years now. They're so awful for you.
Yeah, I had, like we were talking the other day, I had pneumonia for about 3 months. So I think I had, in that course, I had all of the antibiotics, as far as I know. Like,
there's none left.
There's none left. Like, I tried every single one of them. So.
Yeah, it just destroys your gut bacteria. And so
yeah.
Go the opposite direction to load up on it, you know, load up on probiotics and prebiotics and just kill that crap out of it. So anyway, I'm not a doctor. Though I play one on television sometimes. All right. Much love to all of you guys. We'll see you back here tomorrow morning. Take care, everyone. Thanks, Philip.
Yeah. Thank you.